Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You're listening once again to another edition of Religion Means Alive. I'm your host, Imam Alfred, the host of Religion Means Alive, and we were just delayed by a few seconds, and as soon as our delay is over, we're going to have a super couple, Rufus and Jenny Triplett. I have been following this couple in Essence Magazine, following them in Ebony Magazine, following them in the Muslim mosque chairs, Muslim convention. And somehow or another, I have not met them in person. Been in the same place. Certainly, I've been following them in cyberspace. I don't want to be saying I'm a cyber stalker, but I'm determined to get this couple on Religion Means Alive. And finally, by the grace of Almighty God, as we say in Quranic terms, Allah, which is also, if you pick up an Arabic Bible, it Allah is the same term. Our audience is primarily an audience of persons of all faiths, and we're here to restore life for African-American people. So I want to welcome the couple of the year, couple of the decade, Rufus and Jenny Triplett. Welcome to Religion Means Alive, and you all can give us an opening statement.
Thanks so much for having us. I think you gave us some more titles of the show.
I got all kinds of titles out of that.
I think you added some more on to what we don't have.
Hey, girl, you need to leave him alone. Let him talk now.
Hey, you're getting the promotions. I wear glasses. Maybe I've read it wrong. We've heard so many bad statistics about us as a people. I think it's about time that we get it wrongly to almost get right. But I'm going to let you all introduce yourself. I know I've been reading about you. Y'all all keep a smile on your face. And, you know, I see you on Facebook every day. You know, and there's another couple I want to get on the program. And I don't know, we missed him. A reunited couple. But we want to promote family life. So you all give us an opening statement. Mine is the titles.
Well, I mean, the only three letters that I really have in front of my name is MRS. I am Mrs. Triplett. And that title I wear well, and that's the one that I really, really love the most, is Mrs. Triplett. And
well, you better be wearing it well. You got to represent, woman.
I am a wife. I'm a mother of three grown knuckleheads, and I am a business owner, amongst many other things. But those are very close and important to me.
I'm just me.
Tell people who you are.
I'm me.
You have title in front of your name, Mr.
I ain't no mister.
Or brother.
I'm just Rufus. That's it.
Brother Rufus.
I'm just Rufus, girl. You better leave that alone. I like all the titles he said. I'm with him. I'm a lone boy right by Nana.
And tell us both, start with Mrs. the title, the MRS and MR. Where are you all originally from, and, you know, how did you all meet?
I'm from Flint, Michigan.
Well, I don't know if you want my story or his story.
He wants the right story.
We are.
Right story. I came outside, and she was there standing just looking at me.
Wait.
And I said, what you looking at there, woman?
See, what happens is your mind goes with age.
I can't tell the story. I don't know what you're doing.
The thing is, we are both originally from Michigan, and we've lived in the Atlanta area for over 20 years.
I got 20-plus years.
We met when we were teenagers, actually, and he was kind of jocking me on my tip. And
what in the
you
girl?
Me.
He said he wants the truth.
I'm telling the truth.
Okay.
He was
a lot watching us now.
He was on my tip, and I wasn't really feeling him at first.
You what, girl?
So it took a minute for us to click, but I would say the rest is history, but it's a lot has happened since that time.
Believe that story if you want.
Okay.
If you want more of the details,
okay, so you're from Flint, Michigan. And how is it that one was in Philly and the other one, and the other one decided that, and you all, how long have you all been married?
Tell a man.
Why I always got to tell somebody how long I've been married? I know how long I've been married.
Okay, go ahead.
25 years. Feel like 25. I've been married for 50.
What?
Huh?
What?
Huh?
No.
I'm just trying to tell you, feel like longer than that.
No, it's been 25 years.
And obviously, you all are still in love, and that's a good thing. Now, tell us, what is it that you all do?
Tell the man what we do. I said, see, we were at an event today, and we got that question at least 45 times. So I guess since I was the one always explaining it, I'll just kind of break it down.
You know what you do.
Yeah, I know what we do.
Trying to correct me all the time. Your mind was saying.
We do a lot. We do a lot. Okay, we own a company, a multimedia company, Dollar International, LLC. And we've owned that for, oh, wow, going on 8 years now. Yeah, 8 years. We just, 8 years in December. And we used to print a magazine for inmates, Prison World Magazine. It went into the prison system domestically and internationally.
Yeah, me doing all the work on it.
To help educate inmates and their families and keep them encouraged while they were incarcerated and doing their time. Well, while we were doing this and also our weekly radio show, the Prison World Radio Hour, we were noticed, shall I say, for our community work and community outreach by Ebony Magazine. That's how we were honored by Ebony Magazine this couple of years, because of our work and what we do, and they wanted to spotlight that in our marriage.
I told you I didn't want to be in no magazine. You made me do that too.
So ever since, because it was a nice honor. So ever since that honor and spotlight happened, it kind of put us out in the forefront as a couple, because we were always really behind the scenes and just doing our thing, and put us out in the forefront and spotlight as a couple, and that brought about our marriage platform. We had a book that was coming out about marriage. Our book is out now, Surviving Marriage in the 21st Century, and we also do marriage workshops and different marriage talks. We do speaking engagements kind of like across the country. So doing one thing, which was the prison world work and dive into the prison system, has spawned into something else, you know, because it was noticed and wanted to be highlighted and spotlighted by someone, has spawned us into other work. So to say what we do a lot.
Yeah, I'm at the boat on vacation this summer. Might take me some time off. You got me doing too much.
You just came back from vacation.
Well, you know, you all are a very cheerful couple. If you wanted, you could do a duet. And Duke Ellington said the greatest duet is a man and woman together. So I think you all are actually accompanying what Duke has said. What do you see? I'm going to start with the man. I started with the woman first. What do you see as the main ingredients, as a group called the main ingredient, was main ingredients, that in keeping a marriage together from a male perspective?
Her leaving me alone, give me my space. When I'm playing the PlayStation, just back off a little bit.
Dude.
Ain't got to be talking to me about nothing when I'm trying to get my. I'm trying to get to the next level.
Why is it always about PlayStation?
Because I be trying to get to the Super Bowl.
Oh,
you be interrupting me too much. Got to stay off of. Really, just. Just backing off a little bit, like, what do we call it? Don't try to change people. I think, besides for putting God first, it's changing people, man. I mean, I think you try to change people to what you want them to be too much. You got to leave that alone. You know, I'll eventually get to it once I get done to the next level. I'll finish that, then I get to doing what you want me to do.
Mm-hmm. And what do you see?
I'm saying just leaving them alone, you know, just backing off a little bit.
I think that there's a lot to be said for that. Sister, what do you see as the what do you see as the main ingredients in keeping a marriage together?
Well, I mean, I always tell people, because they want to say, you know, what is your one big secret or the one thing? And I don't ever feel that there's one thing that you can hone in on to say that that's something that you need or one thing that you can concentrate on for marriage. Because marriage is inclusive of a lot of things. It includes several different things. You can go from money to health to travel to children. I mean, there's a lot of things that you
can do. You know, PS4, all kind of stuff.
There's a lot of things that you hone in on. So I would think that, of course, everybody says communication. You have all these experts out here who want to give advice, and communication is one of them. But to go a little further on that, you have to know how to communicate. The way that my husband and I communicate may not work for some people, but this is how we vibe. This is how we gel. This is how we get through our day. You have may have some people that's a little bit more serious in their communication, but we're really playful with ours because, I mean, life is too short to just be, you know, unplayful.
Jail. I don't put jail in my hair no more.
That was when
I was 16 years old.
And then you also have to put up with stuff like that, with what he just said, and know how to take it in its context.
Nobody's got to put up with nothing.
His context and relevance, and just kind of move on from the situation. Let things go and let things be. So knowing every inch and aspect of your mate is huge. That is a huge factor. And it takes some time to get there because you're not going to know it as a newlywed and even in the first couple of years.
Get divorced before they get to know all that information.
Yeah, you learn it. You learn it, and you learn it as life and time goes along.
I could have got a divorce about 3 or 4 times.
That's it, just 3 or 4.
Well, 5 or 6. How many more you want?
You've given us some ingredients. Why do you think you all were chosen, and you're getting so much publicity around your successful marriage? I mean, you're obviously a business people, your mom, your mates. What is it? Explain, sister, why you think you're getting that kind of attention. And I first of all, I apologize that you all were, I missed you at the Moscow's convention.
And vice versa, because like I said, once I saw on Facebook that you were there, I mean, you know, but we were just pulled in so many different directions, and the time that we got there, and then, you know, people coming over to our table, and it just got really twisted in the times. And plus, coming from Atlanta, we were very, very tired. Very, very tired.
Can I tell you something?
Sure.
You know, because I know you're going to say what you're going to say, but let me say this, brother, that Allah works in mysterious ways in putting us in this position, because I came kicking and scratching, bro. I didn't think that my relationship was the one to be focused on, to tell you the truth. But so many things kept happening and kept coming in my face that everybody just kept telling me, well, you need to just quit fighting. You know, Allah does things and set, Allah has a purpose for everything. And evidently, this must be something you're supposed to be doing. So I went on ahead and did it a couple of times and did a couple of workshops. And alhamdulillah, man, it's been a blessing to even hear that some of the things that I said have worked for some of these couples.
Yeah, and this isn't something that we thought. Because like I told you, we were doing prison work. We still do. You know, we were doing prison work. We get calls all the time from inmates, from their family members. We go into prisons and speak on different things, education, trying to give encouragement, upliftment, whatever. That was us, behind the scenes.
But why was you chosen, though?
I'm trying to get to that part. Putting out a bi-monthly magazine for 7 years, that's a lot of issues. You know, issues of magazines, putting in the work, and our magazine is like 32 to 40 pages, so that's a lot of time. That's a lot of answering mail. That's just grass grunt work. So we weren't looking to be thrust into the spotlight, you know, for anything. But for someone to have seen something, the dynamics of what we had and whatever was going on in marriages in the black family, and they were like, hey, you guys are a great example and wanting to put us out there. Now, that's not, I don't feel that's something, you know, we should have denied. No, no thank you.
I did say no thank you. Y'all just didn't listen to me.
You're funny. And then it wasn't, they asked for a picture of us. It wasn't good enough that we sent them a picture. We thought it was a great picture. They were like, no, we're going to send you to a photo shoot. They sent us to a $1,000, multi-$1,000 photo shoot with like the best in the business because they really wanted us to be showcased, you know, well.
Well, you could have gave me a couple of them grand.
They wanted us to be represented well, and it was just, you know, like I said, Allahu Alam, he's the only one that knows why all of this happened, but it's definitely not something that we asked for or saw.
Yeah, because I tell you, I think any person that stayed married over 10 years should get a medal, and I think that if we were to reward people in our communities, it would send a signal that marriage is not a, you know, I've been married twice, you know, marriage is not an easy situation. Being a parent is not an easy situation. And unfortunately, there's no manual comes with either. And coming from the African-American community, very little passed down, you know, tell us a little bit, both of you all, about what it was like for you all to grow up.
Did you hear the question? You said tell us what it's like, how it was for us to grow up.
Yes, your own parents, your own personal life.
Okay, you got that. Okay, we both grew up in two parent households, and his parents are still together. They've been married 46 years, be 47 in April.
You don't know how long my parents been married.
I've been with you a long.
Well, that's too long, man.
Okay.
Shoot.
And you know, I'm the one to say it, and they don't mind because they know I talk and I say it about their marriage. Their marriage was not the most non-dysfunctional.
Hey, marriage. My family ain't dysfunctional, nah. Shoot.
Lived a very, very dysfunctional family. My parents were both together, married until the day my father passed. He passed 13 years before my mom did, but I did grow up in a two-parent household.
Well, it was regular to us.
And not to say that mine wasn't dysfunctional either, but I did have two parents, my original mother and original biological, you know, mother and father in the household. And I just saw what it was about marriage that, you know, you're going to stick in there and make it work or you're not.
Well, I thought mine stuck in there and they made it work. They're still together to this day. But I'll just say this. I didn't want to be in a marriage for 20 plus years and not be happy. You know, I mean, you can be married for 20, 30, 40 years and not be happy. But what I wanted was to show my children, especially, something different than I saw growing up as far as a marriage. And that man and woman being together, doing things with the children. I didn't really grow up with that. You know, we kind of did things that we on our own in my household.
And you kind of respect what you get from your parents. I mean, from my mom, I learned a great work ethic and a side hustle. Even though my mom had...
Is that why you got me hustling around here?
Most definitely.
Oh,
even
my
though my mom, she worked a job for many years and she retired. She worked for the phone company. She retired from the phone company. Her side hustle was swift. She always had a side hustle and some side money.
Your side hustle, Swift, got me out here hustling.
My dad was a person of trade, and he was an engineer, and he had a really good job at a young age. But he also had a hustle. So I feel that I learned, you know, a little bit of both. Both of them are more so in me, but I learned my strength in a lot of things from my mom. So I really feel that to have a strong family, you need both of those parents because it's things that you get from both. Now, my husband, yeah, he learned a little bit both from both his
parents. Hold up now.
Yeah, you did.
I sure did. And you don't want me to show you what I learned from my daddy, do you?
And then I have to show you what I learned from my mama.
Oh yeah, well I ain't gonna show you that then.
I get it from my mama.
I'm gonna leave that back in the pocket then.
Uh-huh. Let me ask you this. Why is it that you all got into the starting the prison magazine?
How do we get started?
Yeah, how do we get started? You
want to
take that?
I just want to get into the...
Prison World started from a newsletter. We used to do a Muslim community newsletter, and it kind of grew... It grew from there.
What had information on there that the prisoners were saying they weren't getting inside?
You didn't get dressed? Got a phone? Nah. Some BS.
Hey, we are on the... Excuse me. We on the air.
Are you on mute?
No, we're not. We're talking. So you have to... Please, you have to go out. I'm sorry, folks. We had some interruption.
Okay.
Oh, I'm
yeah, that Prison World started from a community newsletter, the Muslim community newsletter, and it was pretty much to just give dawah to Muslim communities that was in prison, and it grew from there. Hello, did we lose you?
Yes, I'm sorry. Anyway, I missed part of what you were saying because I'm being interrupted by a 17 and 13-year-old.
It happens. It happens. I was saying Prison World started from a newsletter. We had a Muslim community newsletter that went into the prisons, just something very informal to give dawah to the community because there are a lot of Muslims that are in prison and they don't have chaplains that come visit them on a regular basis. They don't have Islamic materials. And that's all that we were pretty much doing. And it grew from there. It started just in the state of Georgia and it grew from there.
Well, the prisoners wanted more. So the newsletter just wasn't helping with the information that they wanted. So we added a page. And after that, the families were interested in what was being said in there, so we just pretty much started putting all kind of information in there for them, and it became a magazine.
It grew from a couple of pages to, like, 32 to 40 pages.
Let me ask you, how did you get interested in prison work? Were either you in prison?
Yeah, I was incarcerated. But before I was incarcerated...
I was incarcerated, too.
No, you were not.
Oh, yeah, I was.
You were not. Before I was incarcerated, we both went through something with one of his family members who was wrongly convicted. And it was pretty much at... It was before we were... He was wrongly convicted before we were married. He was incarcerated pretty much during a long period of our marriage. So we spent a lot of time going to prison, visiting him, writing him, researching laws.
Oh, when he got locked up, I took a real interest in the prison system because I wanted to know what my boy was getting into. So it was before the magazine or the newsletter that we took an interest in the prison system. After, like I said, my boy got locked up for a crime he did not commit, and yeah, that's pretty much how it started.
And how did you all both come? I'm going to ask sister, then I'm going to ask brother. How did you come into Al-Islam? What was it about the Islamic religion that appealed to you, starting with the wife, and then we go to the husband?
Well, it's something that... that I grew up Baptist in the church, highly, highly in the church. And I mean, when I say in the church, deep in the church, you know, I was in church Sunday school, in church service. I was at the after church program, the late night program, the past anniversary, the adult choir, the junior choir, the usher board, you know, all of that. And pretty much because my mom wanted you know, that's where she wanted us. That's where she wanted us to be. And it was always something that I did not feel right. Something was not right about what was going on, and nobody could really answer my questions. When I met my husband, before he became my husband,
I was answering them questions, wasn't I?
You weren't answering nothing. And his family started coming around his family before he was my husband. A lot of his family members are Muslim.
Yeah, I had a lot of Muslims in my family actually, but my father in my household, we didn't have Islam. And I found out later on in life that my grandfather actually, he was a Baptist minister, but he actually found out about Islam and he brought it to the family. And all of my uncles and everybody else, I fought Islam growing up, but in my household, my father didn't give that to us. So, I mean, I just later on in life, Allah gave it to me because he was only Allah can guide, and I'm a true testament of that because I grew up around Islam, but I was not practicing it. But later on in life, because of what I did believe, I didn't believe in eating pork. I didn't believe in shacking up with a sister before marriage. I didn't believe in a lot of things. My moral was correct, but I just didn't have religion type of thing. We didn't grow up with any type of religion in my household. We didn't go to church. We didn't go to the masjid. We didn't. So Allah guided me, really. And when he did, when I saw it, I came 100%. And I wanted to know everything about Islam that I didn't know growing up. And that's pretty much how it started.
And sister, what made you turn to Al-Islam as your way of life?
Well, like I was saying, when I started coming around my husband's family, that's when I started seeing Islam, because I had never experienced it or saw anything about it or anything where I was growing up, nothing, nada, nothing.
Didn't you just say that?
I didn't finish what I was
saying. Oh, well, it looked like I thought you just said it already.
And so seeing his family and started asking questions, hearing different words, Aslam alaikum, Ramadan, you know, salat, prayer, starting to hear different things and asking questions about it, it made me more curious about it. So once I learned, it started answering some of those questions that the church did not answer, and things just started making more sense. And that's what led me to it.
And how old were you all when you all got married?
How old were you?
Yes. I know you all were childhood sweethearts, even though y'all kind of complained about who was in love with who. But, I mean, y'all, what made you decide to go and get married, brother, besides not wanting to shack up?
Oh, wasn't no shacking up. That wasn't about to happen.
Why not? Who said?
I said.
Who?
Oh my goodness.
See, you can't even tell that right.
Yeah, what about
you can't even tell that right. I told her she came down to D.C. and I told her, hey, we're going to have to get married because I can't move in with you unless you're my wife. I ain't tell you that. Girl, better tell the truth.
Said something like that.
And what else I tell you? Let's just touch swine, what I say?
Wait, we were 21.
Ain't going to touch who? That's right.
Dude,
that's what I told you.
Calm down.
Huh? Oh, I need to calm down? Okay, I'm finna calm down right now.
You know what? I could just let you all conduct the program. Y'all are pre-act show. And if you'd like to join the conversation at 805-727-7013, you're on Religion Means Alive with Imam Alfred. Religion Means Alive, and I'd just like to make a commercial appeal. I'm going to be the Savior's Day khatib, at the Jummah prayer service on the 20th of February at the Mosque Care building in Hazel Crest, Illinois, and I also will be one of the speakers at the Mosque Care's Savior's Day convention, celebrating 40 years of the Quran and the guidance of Al-Islam in America, and the revival of Al-Islam in the world. I also want to remind you that I would appreciate those of you. Some of you know I have prostate cancer, and I've tried to treat it with natural method, not under some jackleg position, but under a medical doctor, licensed physician. And there's some alternative treatment that my insurance company won't pay for. So I would appreciate it, each of you or my friends, if you would send donations to Imam Alfred Muhammad Prostate Cancer Fund on GoFundMe. GoFundMe, Alfred Muhammad Prostate Cancer Fund. We really need your donations. We have to pay the physician $1,300 treatment. The treatment that he has given to us, or he proposed to give to us. You can research it. Mistletoe treatment is coming from Germany. Has been very effective in treating cancer. I'm in the early stages, and I need your support. So if any one of you like to donate, please just go to GoFundMe and look up Imam Alfred's Prostate Cancer Fund.
I'm on it, man.
Yes. I want to ask you about being a parent. But before I ask you about being a parent, I want to ask you why did you all decide to move to the great, considered the black capital of black America, Atlanta, Georgia, ATL for short.
Oh, well, I was actually on tour with the group Ready for the World, and we came through Atlanta, and it was prospering, man. There was a lot going on back in 88, and it was growing, it was booming, and I said, if I get married and have a family, I'm going to bring them back here and raise my family here. That's pretty much how I got to Atlanta. It was a good thing my wife didn't object to it when I married her, though.
I always liked Atlanta. We traveled a lot as children, you know, me, my mom, my sister, and because she was born and raised in Florida, so we would always take road trips from Michigan to Florida, and Atlanta, of course, was one of the cities that we would go through. And so whenever we would come through here, you know, I was always intrigued with the city. And, of course, when we talked about moving here, it was a mecca of a lot of things, and it was called Hotlanta. I was like, okay, well, hey, it sounds like a fresh start.
Sure is hot up in here.
Let's go.
Is that your cornbread?
Yes, so you both decided to move to Atlanta. What is your impressions of Atlanta, Georgia, now?
Okay, I didn't hear you. Say it again.
What is your feelings? Has your feelings for ATL changed, or has it increased in love for Atlanta?
Oh, we love it here. I think, 22 years later,
As long, I used to go downtown all the time, but I ain't going down there no more.
We move around a little bit differently based on traffic and our needs, but 22 years later, we're still here.
I think it was 3 million people when I got here, and it was over 10 million. It was about five years ago.
No, it hit 10 million last year.
Yeah, we like New York up in here.
Yes. Someone in the studio said you all are made for each other, and that's the observation of a 14-year-old. So I think it's a very good observation.
Alhamdulillah, we have to give, you know, shouts out to the youth, because just recently we did find there a lot of youth are following us, so I guess we've become role models and mentors.
That boy thought I was 26 years old.
Yeah,
I was happy that day.
Role models and mentors of the youth, so we have to be very aware of that.
I know you all are busy couple. You've taken off of your very busy schedule. Tell us about your business activity.
Whoo, bruh.
What part?
She needed to quit. That's why I'm trying to tell y'all earlier, man. She's working me like a horse up in here.
Yeah, we were.
She got the whip and everything on me.
We were just up and out early today.
Tell us how she uses the whip on you.
Oh, bruh. I come through the door, and she got assignments for me. She started marking them on the board. She bought a board especially for me, so she can give me everything she wants me to do. I said, girl, ain't nothing. We finna have to hold up. That's what I said, but I'm about to take me a rest. She don't know it. I'm about to go on vacation, though. But anyway, it's
he'll
a lot.
Be all right. He'll be all right.
It's
not worried.
It's a lot, bro. It's a lot, though. Really, like, I mean, it's all good. I'm alive. I just pray that we can get to the not only the young people, but it's a lot of struggling, a couple or adults, even with raising their children. How to parent? We run into that a lot, which made us
Are you all conducting workshops? Tell us what your workshop is like. Let's hear from sister and then from you, brother.
Well, we do marriage workshops for the last 2 years. Like I said, we were thrust into that. When the book came out, Surviving Marriage in the 21st Century, we went around doing book signings. The first year we did 16 cities, but that wasn't enough for people because they wanted our advice on marriage. We really didn't know how bad things were until we started getting out.
Ooh, Lord, boy, just had to hear all that stuff, didn't I?
Talking to people in different communities and everything, because like I said, we lived in our own world, in our own existence, and everything was all fine and peachy in our world, in our existence. You know, we're good. But to get out and to hear and see so many problems, you know, with marriage, it was just crazy. And that's, you know, how we started doing as far as the marriage workshop. We did one workshop, and the word spread from there, like, y'all need to hear what these people got to say.
You kept on taking me from all these cities.
We got, Allah is my witness. We advertised one workshop in one city, and from there, it spread word of mouth. It went crazy, like, all over the place. So last year, we did 13 cities. Okay, first year we did 16 cities. Last year we did 13 cities. I said, this year I'm trying to stay at home just a little bit more. So now we're just doing different spots where we can just do workshop. We can do at least two or three things in one spot and not have to travel as much.
Okay. Now, what does the seminars consist of? And, you know, I want you to share both from your – I want to – before I ask that question, I really want to know, just tell us some of the problems. Give us three bullet points, problems that you have found in marriages, Brother Rufus, and then we heard from sister.
Three problems you found what, Sadie? I couldn't hear. Three problems we found with other marriages?
Yes, in marriages that you toured the various cities.
Oh, okay. How much time you got, man?
Well, you know the first.
Well, we got. You know what? We're on the air for another hour, so if you can stay, just give us three. I'll give you 5 minutes, both of your piece, to tell us.
Well, no, we got one minute a piece. That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, the first and foremost, brother, everybody that's probably listening knows this, is money. Money, money, money. And I'll just tell you a real quick story that the brother was, the brother selling weed, the sister didn't want him selling it, and it was causing problems in their family, although the bills and stuff was paid. But I just had, when we did the workshop, I had to break the brother's side and say, bro, like I said, the first tip in our book is put the law first. So if you're putting the law first, and do you actually think this is a good way to take care of your family, and you're putting yourself at risk at the time? I don't know what the law is now about marijuana. Well, in different states, it's legal, and in other states, it's not. So you're putting this family in a position where he could be taken from his two boys. He had two boys. And I'm like, brother, you need to be there for them boys. So if you get taken, who gonna take on your role? So anyway, the brother did quit. This is one of those good situations where he quit. He got a regular job, and he was taking care of his family, and his wife was happy. The whole family was happy. He was there spending more time with his family, which is where we feel, in the black family for sure, we're not spending enough time with as a family together. So that's the first one, is money. Money, I don't care. That was just an example I gave you guys, but money is a big issue. Trying to change people, trying to make someone do what you want them to do, is another big one. And we keep telling them, let Allah take care of it. I mean, you, one thing I've learned in accepting Islam is I can't guide nobody to nothing. I can't make nobody do nothing. The only one that can make us do something is Allah. So if we make our doors to Allah and we, first of all, change our or work on ourselves, then Allah may grant us and change that person for you or whatnot, or that person may change. But I'm saying we can't. That was one of the big issue too, is trying to change people. So I told them, quit trying to change each other. Anything?
I ain't got my turn yet. You done?
Yeah, them two big ones to me that I found across the country.
Okay, and okay, I'm gonna break it down on a male and female level. With the females, there's a lot of standards. I mean, the list is long and the standard is high. That's what we're finding on the female side. I'm not saying you have to lower your standards, but you also have to put it in context, because if you've had this list since 2010, it's 2015, and you're still not married or you're having issues in a marriage, then maybe you need to change some things. And it's hard for people to change. It's hard for people to do something different. Because
that one lady was rolling out the door.
Exactly, exactly. And they feel like they're giving so much up of themselves, but they don't realize that what we do and this marriage that we have, it takes a lot of compromise. And we don't just get up and do things without having a discussion or something comes up. It takes a lot of compromise. You can live a single life or you can live a married life. Now, with men, what we have found is that their expectations are unrealistic, because if we're talking about in a Muslim society and females, everybody can't marry Beyonce. And I don't know why you would want to anyway, because Beyonce is a tornado, and we are fighting a tornado. And a really good Muslim law is not a Beyonce. But this is what you're comparing it to. This is what your model.
Yeah, we bringing that outside stuff into Islam, and that ain't it.
This is what your model is, and I do say model in quotations, because you could take that literally and figuratively, that this is what you want.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. But you just might not find it, that's all.
9 times out of 10, you're not going to find it. I'm just saying. And you need to look and see, because the best thing for you might be right in front of you, but you're turning that down because you're still seeking, you know, trying to get something else that you think is out there.
He might have been looking for Janet, though.
And then, okay, well, Janet is
so. It has to be Beyonce now.
Janet is so 2010, and it's 2015.
He might have been looking for Taylor Swift.
Maybe you need to be looking for a Khadija or a Saida or a Fatima, or, you know, something that's going to be a little bit better for you in this life and the next life.
Okay, you said the third and fourth, he's got money, trying to change a person, and what we would think issues, Robert, that
well,
couples.
The third one was what I said as far as the standards.
What's your
having too high
standards. Okay.
And then the fourth with the males is unrealistic expectations.
And then, I mean, you know, we can go on and on, but, I mean, you know, our iman is not, everybody's iman is not in the same spot. But we want.
Okay, can you break that down? Can you break down iman for, because we have a large non-Muslim audience. So tell us when you say iman, and also share some tidbits to our people. You know, most of us who listen to our audience, and you all very well know it, we are calling recovering from the effects of slavery. What does that to our primarily African-American audience?
Well, okay, and we speak to a lot of non-Muslims as well. I mean, and it applies to them. When we talk about marriage, it's for all of mankind. So when I'm talking about iman, I'm talking about faith. Everybody's faith is not where the other person's is. And what we find is, well, this sister don't pray this way, and she don't make her 5 prayers. Or brother, I mean, hand it over to God. Or sister, hand it over to God. If you don't feel this brother is practicing the deen the way you feel he should be or whatnot, but we can't control that. I'm saying that God controls faith. We don't control it. Or he sees what's in us. That ultimately controls what knowledge he's going to give you. So iman, faith, everybody wants someone on that level. And where is the test going to come in at? See, the marriage is a big test for us as mankind, and we fail this test, and which is one of the reasons why we do what we do. We fail this test tremendously in the United States of America. Shoot, marriage, I think we was up like 60-something percent the last time I looked as far as divorce in this country.
I was wondering, is substance abuse and gambling and pornography, have you found that coming up a lot in our as a major problem in couple, as you do couple workshops?
You know, if we were doing this maybe 10 years ago, that would probably be a big deal. But we hear more about Facebook than we do all three of them wrapped up together.
What's the problem
Facebook
with Facebook?
Facebook has come and shut it down, okay? We just did our radio show last week on cases where people snapped. And a couple of those cases were about what happened on Facebook. You post something on Facebook. One lady stabbed her husband violently because of a post he put on Facebook.
You ain't got to tell me what the other lady did.
Another man killed his wife because she changed her Facebook status from married to single. He snapped. He lost it. So it's a lot of things that's going on Facebook. And you see it. If you watch the shows, you'll see it. It's all over Maury and divorce court and some other things, what you did on Facebook, what you said, what's it, you know. And it has come. Money may be the number one reason for divorce, but Facebook is right up there. And I would not be surprised if they do a survey this year that Facebook has overtaken money as far as divorce is concerned.
So in other words, people are not respecting privacies and our family secrets. Everything is being spilled on Facebook. You know, but you know what amazes me? People write on Facebook they went to a restaurant. I mean, it's interesting.
Well, you know
it's
what?
Strange.
Let me take about 30 seconds and break down Facebook, email. Let me break this down to you. For me, for someone who talks to a lot of people, Facebook is good for me because I could not. Even if I had just 30 friends and I talked to those people daily, I don't have the time to take 30 phone calls for somebody to say, girl, what you doing, what you did today? What did you do today? What did you do? What did you cook? What did you do this or whatever? But if I post it on Facebook, everybody sees it. And I don't have to take that. I don't have to get all the text messages. I don't have to get all the calls just to have communication, you know, daily to let someone know I'm okay, this is what we're doing. Because mind you, if I don't post on Facebook a day or two or whatever, somebody's going to be hitting me up. Okay, Jenny, where are you? I haven't seen you around.
Somebody done died up in here.
Yeah, what's going on? So that's how Facebook has changed the game as far as communication is concerned.
People just use it for the wrong reasons.
Yes.
That's all.
If people use it a lot for the wrong reasons. But I never have a problem with someone posting that they went to a restaurant. Show me what you ate, because my husband loved to eat, so it might be someplace.
If it was halal, I might go get it.
Yeah, it might be someplace we want to go. I don't have a problem with people talking about their family, showing their babies what their kids are doing. You know what? We're looking forward to grandkids. Our kids are grown. You know, we don't have anyone but us.
But what we're trying to do is get couples to do that more so together.
Yeah, and talking about that. Now, I do have some problems with some folks and some of the things that they post, but I address that in a different way. And if it's a problem with you posting certain things about your relationship and you're disrespecting your mate and putting things out there like that, then that's a problem in your relationship.
Yeah, you shouldn't be doing it.
And
that's gotta respect the relationship first.
Yeah, that you have to handle. But all that other stuff, that I feel that that's great communication because I know for me it alleviates my burden of having, you know, so many people call me. When my phone rings, 9 times out of 10 it's going to be for some type of business you know, somebody want to talk about a contract, you know, want us to go somewhere, a question about something, but it's not going to be, hey, girl, what you doing? What'd you do today? It's not going to be that type of conversation.
Post something on there and I don't know about it. We're going to have some problems up in here.
Let me ask you this. We see TV shows, Love and Hip Hop, Atlanta Housewives, Basketball Housewives. How does that play? What is the interplay between that and Facebook? I know you talked about stabbed his wife to death because she put single on it. He just lost it. I mean.
Yes. That's what, you know, all of those, and trust me, we don't watch any of it. The only reason I know what's going on those shows because it comes down our timeline, which means is people are watching those shows. And the problem with that is, number one, I mean, it's supporting an element of entertainment that's not really beneficial. I mean, can one person even tell me what is beneficial from any of those shows? A lot of it is fake. Those people, the housewives, they aren't rich. They ain't got money. You know, they're ending up coming out as fraud. You know, so I'm not sure. And a lot of that fighting and stuff that's going on, I don't understand how that is beneficial in any way. It's definitely not beneficial for the black community. Not at all. So to see that come down our timeline and the people that are supporting it, I really have to wonder what their relationships are like. What their marriages are like.
I don't be wondering. Someone just texted me and asked me whether or not, what do you all think about a Muslim woman who's lonely and she wanted to get married to a non-Muslim or a non-Muslim man that's want to marry a non-Muslim woman? Just give us your take on that.
Well, a Muslim man, I mean, God put everything in order. And a Muslim man, the male is going to be the head of his household. So a Muslim man married a non-Muslim, I mean, that's okay. Hopefully, by Allah, he'll teach her concerning Allah. Now, a Muslim female married a non-Muslim male, I mean, he's going to be head of his household. So, I mean, if he don't accept Islam in his household, where does that put her? I look at it from the standpoint that Allah says in Quran, and I don't think that would be a good situation for a Muslim.
And I, you know, that was something that stuck with me with growing up in the church. And in the Bible, it does say that a man is the head of his household and a wife is to follow her husband. Now, it says that in the Bible, so that stuck with me. So whatever this knucklehead might be doing, as long as he ain't leading me
Poor
to hell.
Girl.
As long as he ain't leading me to hell, you know, I am to follow his leadership. So a Muslim woman really needs to think about that, that's how that is not lawful, because you cannot follow your husband if he is not Muslim. You know, you're Muslim and he's not. But how can you follow him and let him lead his household?
When you know, because Allah done gave it to you, when you know this is whatever
the straight path
he's doing is not true,
right?
Type of thing. I don't, you know, Allah knows best, man. I mean,
we've come across that as well, Imam Alfred.
Okay, so that has been presented as a problem. What about having a husband? He's a Muslim, the wife Muslim. I mean, but the husband is not a practicing Muslim, or the wife is not a practicing Muslim. They Muslim culturally, they may show up for the Eid or show up for some big program, but they're really not practicing the other. Is that a part of your program when you talk about not changing people? How do you deal with that?
You say, what you say, man? They just show up. They show up for the Eid. That's like going to church on Christmas and Easter.
That's right. That's exactly right. You know, I mean, people, you know, in fact, my ministry is to the most of the 2.5 million person that are not really affiliated in the message. You know, I once went to perform a wedding, and I didn't bring my Quran with me. So I asked the family, see, you have a Quran? They said, no, we don't have the Quran. I had to go 2 blocks to get a Quran because These people identified themselves as Muslims, but they didn't know anything about the religion at all. Same thing, I've gone to many janazas or get a call from a funeral director, say, Mom, would you come and conduct a janaza? And the people, nobody knew anything. I mean, they didn't know the first thing. I don't knock them. I love the fact they identify. But we have to understand that perhaps 98% of the people who identify with Islam are just in the general market. It's just an identification. So, I mean, if you're a Muslim, there's a practicing Muslim, and you marry your husband and you find out he's, you know, he hasn't made a lot, he still smokes cigarettes, he still got the lottery tickets in his pocket. You know, every once in a while he takes a nip, probably smokes some weed. How do you deal with that? Do you come across that in these workshops?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the advice will still be the same, but you still have to give, we're still all accountable for giving knowledge. I mean, we still have to give dawah. We still have to, you say a word to the right. I'm not saying broadly the person. My dad still smokes, but I tell him every time I see him, you shouldn't be smoking. And you're smoking around your grandkids and the smoke. So I'm still giving that advice, but I'm not broadly. You might want to move on. Okay, well, what's on the game? So you still can't try to change that person. When I say don't try to change the person, I mean, I'm not saying don't give them words of wisdom or try to teach them something. I'm saying we can't broadly. We can't, well, if you don't change this, I'm leaving. You know, we're trying to stop divorce.
And you have to remember that we're all dealing with different levels of iman. So, but if you have two people in the household that's just, you know, saying that they believe in the oneness of Allah and His Prophet, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, they at least have half a chance. That, you know, it's half a chance of what's going on, but it's going to take one person or both, more than likely one person, to tighten up their discipline as far as their religion is concerned. Because other than that, you kind of have the blind leading the blind. And, I mean, if they are showing up for Eid, then they're kind of halfway conscious of there's supposed to be something going on here.
Right.
Well, you know what is interesting? I find that more of these people, they may not show up for the Eid, but there are large numbers of them that will do Ramadan. I mean, I know guys who smoke cigarettes, drink, play cards, whatever. May not play cards. I mean, they gamble. But they will do Ramadan. And, I mean, it's a large portion. I call them the Ramadan Muslims. They may not go to a masjid. They may not know you're supposed to read the Quran every day. I mean, they just don't know anything other than they don't eat during the day. They make
there's what you call 30-day Muslims, the ones, you know, that does Ramadan, whatever. But alhamdulillah, they, you know, they're still conscious in some type of way, and
I'm not minimizing them in the least. I think that's
but I think maybe it's something that they have learned in their behavior that, okay, I know I've been screwing up all year long, but here come Ramadan, and I'm gonna take these 30 days to concentrate.
That ain't something good, but I mean, I know what you're saying.
Yeah,
I'm just saying this is where our leaders have to be skillful and find ways of reaching people. Just understand what we're dealing with. But I want to now ask you, what do you think of the idea of professional marital counseling, marriage counseling, family counseling, and even just family coaching? I mean, you know, people can't just do it by themselves. I mean, you need help. Used to be the grandma, used to have grandpa would help. But now people are just kind of left alone. Share with us your feelings about that.
I'm going to let my husband answer first because I'm going to give it to you real high.
Well, I think both of us should go to counseling. I mean, it should be a qualified. I tell people this, that a lot of people might have degrees, and I'm not saying nothing's wrong with the degree, but I would take experience over a degree any day. When I went and saw counseling for my marriage, it was to those people who had married 20-plus years. You know, and that's what taught me, and that's why I said, I'm asking them, well, why don't y'all teach this to everybody? Everybody needs to know how to solve these problems. And that's why we said earlier in this conversation that I felt that I wasn't going to resist it no more. I was just going to go ahead and do it. But, yes, counseling is very much needed because a lot of times if we have someone else's take in our marriages, we wouldn't be so quick for divorce. But we're so quick to go to the divorce first, and the United States has made it so easy for us to do it that I just get out. I'm just done with it. But, no, we need counselors. We need those experienced people in marriages to step up and help try to save some of these marriages. But yes, we do need the counselors.
All right. Now, my take on that, he mentioned part of it as far as qualified counselors. I just don't think, and this is me personally, I don't think everybody is qualified to give good marriage advice.
They're not.
It's not even possible. I mean, if you've been in a relationship, an abused relationship, if you're divorced, you've only been married 3, 4, 5 years, whatever, and there's no possible qualification. If you haven't been married at all, you have a lot of single people giving marriage advice. Everybody just is not qualified to give it. You go through a lot. Marriage takes a lot. If you want to put religion in it, that's adding to the equation. You know, if you just have general principles of marriage, there's a lot that you go through with, like I said earlier in the show, finances, kids, you know, several things, arguments. How do you argue? How do you handle that? Sex. You know, how do you talk about that? How do you do that? There's so much that you go through.
If you ain't got 20+ years, you ain't telling me nothing.
Yeah, and it's just there's not a lot of people who can give qualified advice. I feel people should seek it, but it should definitely be someone that's going to tell you a little bit more than just pray about it.
Not your boy.
Tell you something that they heard off of a show.
Right. If I went to my boy's advice, I'd have been divorced 20 years ago. Oh, no, not
him. And your girlfriends and sometimes even your parents. I want to now ask you about, well, let's stay with this because this is a real issue for us. You know, the Quran gives us advice about appointing someone, but I find more marriages, I've done a lot of, I now just don't do any marital counseling. I've done it as an imam, and I just found out that there are people who are probably more qualified than I am, and I do have training in it. It's a very draining thing, and I really applaud your ministry. I think it's a ministry, and that you all need a gold medal. But I believe that a person should have experience. You know, a physician can't just read a book and become a physician.
No.
What you all
there you
doing
go.
Is
there
you have to practice
right.
medicine. So, you know, the same thing, you have practiced. You have seen everything in marriages as your own marriage. So I think a person that does marital counseling, family counseling, should first have a successful family life of their own. You know what I mean?
I couldn't say it better myself.
I have expertise.
Absolutely. I definitely couldn't agree, you know, with you more. Because if you're sitting up there talking to a counselor, a man, you know, but you go home and you beating your wife, how are you giving someone marital advice? Seriously?
Oh, you've been married 7 times. Are you cheating? What the hell can you tell anybody? I mean, even subconsciously, if you're just listening, you're transmitting your disease to that person.
Yes.
I think that makes sense. Let me go to another subject that's a hot-button subject. Is most marriages now, I think, 67% of divorces. That means we have blended families. It means dealing with step-parents. It means dealing with ex-wives, babies, mama, daddy, drama, grandma, drama, all kinds of drama. But share with us your thoughts on this drama that comes out of what I call baggage. Some people say they don't have baggage, they have trucks and storage bins that they bring into relationships, marriages.
Imam Alfred, some folks got footlockers.
A couple of semis.
they got armoires, okay, as far as the baggage is concerned. But I feel, after talking to several people, that they don't realize it's baggage until you point it out.
Right.
To them.
A lot of people ain't even conscious of it.
Yeah, and it, because it's their situation and what they deal with, they don't realize it's baggage. And they're bringing that in and spreading those emotions. They don't even understand.
That's why you need counseling.
And we're not even just talking about with children. We talk about with the in-laws. Because, mind you, when you have sets of children with different people, you also are dealing with sets of in-law, the grandparents.
Right, exactly. You know, exactly.
Those relationships are so strained, you know, because you can't seem to deal, you know, with certain issues. And I'm not gonna say it's just the mother or the father, but you also have on the other side, like I said, the grandparents or whoever else, aunties, uncles, whoever,
uncle,
cousins, people with drama in their own life. Trust me. Black families are so screwed up right now. We have so much work to do.
And just because you love these people, just because you grew up with them, does not make them qualified to handle whatever your situation is in your life.
Right.
I'm not saying I can handle everybody's situation in everybody's life.
Right.
But our loved ones, I get your point, because our loved ones, a lot of them are not qualified because of the way they grew up. It's because of what the baggage that they have, no doubt.
And when I tell a lot of people about when I hear problems and things, and I say, why don't you just walk away? You know, they pause and like, why did she just say that? Why is she telling me to just walk away from the situation? Because in my mind, it's that simple. Whatever all this drama and everything that's going on, why are you having to be nasty to someone, calling people out their name, just doing things, making the child a pawn in a game that's playing a circle, a bad circle, a pattern of behavior, why can't you just walk away? See, in that instant, I turn that mirror around. You got to flip that mirror. You got to look at yourself. You got to check yourself.
But that's the problem. People got to look at themselves first.
Check
and
the man
we're always
in the
looking at that other person.
And,
but we got to look at ourselves.
And find out, what you know, how are you contributing to the problem?
Michael Jackson said it. I started. That's what he said.
Oh, jeez.
Rufus, you've been chiming in heavily on counseling. And why you say that? You know, because I want to further pin you to the wall on that, because you know I know you're right, but I would say show you're right, but I know that there's incest, I know that there's abuse, and while we're in this, I think women should really, people should really want to investigate who they're marrying. You know, I mean, I know women marry people and haven't checked the guy out. Right, they bring them around their children, they don't know anything about this guy. You know, I mean, they just know he's nice, he goes to the masjid, he plays. In public, he's a beautiful guy. He's a monster inside. She's a monster inside. I mean,
I'm going to tell you what the problem is. The problem is, you can go back to the olden days. You know, you don't even have to be a practicing Islam to know this, but you can go back to the olden days, and what they used to do was bring the chap in and he would sit down to talk to the father of the female. And the father will get to know him because, once again, when we do our workshop, we split the men and the women up because men are going to talk more with men about, we'll open up a little bit faster than we will with women in the room and vice versa with women. So that process of vetting the guy who your daughter or cousin or niece is going to marry has been halted. The female that they own then, and he ain't going to tell her everything. She's not going to really get to know the character of that person until they are behind closed doors, and then she might not like what she sees. So that vetting process that I feel we should, I don't have a daughter, but if I had a daughter, that would be done. I mean, I have to vet the guy who my daughter is talking about being with versus her doing it herself, going out on dates and chilling or whatever. I mean, like I said, this ain't nothing new. Islam and what Islam is teaching us is not nothing new. This is things that they were doing back in the day of old. They just got away from it.
You know, I just got to chime in because, you know, I tell my daughters this all the time. Hey, don't let me have to come and you want me to lay hands on somebody that you have never introduced to me. You know, you know, I got to do a healing session. You know, that's the only thing we do is lay hands on you. That's the old Christian term, lay hands on them. But now I got to lay hands on somebody, and I don't even know this joker from Adam's house cat, because you failed in it if you want to keep this in the dark, but now you got a black eye. Now you want the brother, you want the uncle, you want the cousin, you want everybody to come and have a laying hands on ceremony, putting themselves at risk.
Right.
So I think that's real.
That is real. And we got to put that process, whether people follow it or not, what we tell them is go back to the old days, okay? I mean, period, point blank. I mean, like I said, I don't care what religion you are. You go back to the old days, they used to vet jokers coming up in their daughter's lives or their nieces. I mean, Will Smith is, what's his name? Martin Lawrence, hey, they were trying to show you, hey, where you come from, boy? What's your name? But they would own that cat. But we got to do it like that. But we have to, they have to let us look into these guys before they get all wrapped up.
What questions? That's I like these. Boy, this is good. This is getting good now. And we got 17 more minutes. What questions should a woman be asking a man, sister? And I'm gonna turn it around and ask the brother. You see there's Mr. Wright over there. He's got a nice new suit on. He got a goofy on his head. He's shining. You know it ain't Vaseline on. He got a big black spot on his head. He's been bumping. You know, I mean, he chants Quran. Now, we don't know what he got to do. What questions should you be asking Mr. Wright? Brother Wright now.
Well, you ask the questions, I think, because females are emotional characters, emotional creatures, they are going to ask the questions.
And characters, too.
Yeah, we can be characters too. We can cut up now.
Yeah. Somebody be cutting up over here.
I think they're gonna ask the questions from their heart, and even though it's cliche, you know, or they've been taught, or they've been through some class, or they've read, you know, questions that a Muslim woman should ask a Muslim man, they're gonna want to know about, you know, can he provide? Now, that's something that we've been telling people, that times are changing. And we have to change with the economic times. You know, like I said, we were at an event earlier today that spoke about the economics and people living in poverty and black families and pulling them up out of poverty. And one of the things that we have to look at is that in these days and times, a lot of women make more than men. So a male may not always be the sole provider for the home or the main provider or the breadwinner of the home. And they have to look at that. And they also have to look at, they have incarcerated so many men that they may not be able to have the high earning potential, but they may be on a high level of their deed.
Right, might be a good brother, you know, or a good sister coming out, either or, but because they've been locked up. I mean, now I'm not saying this is something we should know, because I know a couple of sisters in some of the workshops married a brother, and she didn't never know that he was locked up. That's something that wasn't disclosed. But once again, that vetting process has to happen. So,
you know, I mean, I know a brother asked a sister one time. He said that how did you deal with anger in your previous relationship? She said, oh, we talked about it. It turned out she was a husband batterer. You know, I mean, it's. Now let's turn it, brother. What questions should brother ask Miss Wright? Has she got the long dress on? As they say in Jersey, she got a long zone. You know, she's Assalamu Alaikum. She's in the Islam. I mean, everything sounds good. She could even chant Quran. She can even she's memorized the last Arabic is up there. What question should you ask her?
I mean, I would want to know what's her relationship with her family. I would want to know
from a brother's standpoint, what does her family think of her?
Wow, good question.
Or
these
her family
are very, very good question
about her than I know. I ain't gonna know nothing, but her family gonna know everything about her.
She gonna tell you she burnt the potatoes. I'll tell you one thing, and they get mad at her. They gonna tell you, she can't cook. You want a potato pie? Oh, girl, she, I mean, I'm gonna tell you, mister. I know you're supposed to be a loser and everything, but every once in a while she dip in them chitlins too. They may tell you the truth or not the truth. But I mean, you have to find those things out. I think another issue for us that we really have to look at too. I mean, it's just buyers beware. Are you prepared to deal with somebody who has a mental illness? I mean, that's real. You know, I mean,
that's
is
real.
The person on medication? Should they be on medication? Have they been on medication? You know, I think that both parties should ask these questions because they're genetics. I know a guy, a woman married a guy, and found out that he had people with autism in his family. Only to turn out that they were shacking. But, I mean, you know, these are still relationships. I mean, you know, they seriously affect people. And
right. Had
a child that now is autistic. So you have to have a genetics basis. And for these kind of retread marriages, I hate to call them retreads, but you really got to find out whether a man or a woman can get along. I want y'all to share with us a little bit about step-parenting, because I know this must come up in these workshops, because that also can be a deal-breaker. You know, I know people, women, they got a guy, you know, she meet the Miss Wright, Sister Wright, Assalamu Alaikum, the dean is all okay. Then Mr. Wright finds out she got a 30-year-old son standing out with him, and his job is to monitor the Jerry Springer show. His job is also to monitor Mary and every other show. And he doesn't wake up to go on his job until 10 o'clock, and he's fighting over the remote. Have you heard these stories before?
Well, everybody is not going to tell everything. So the way that we moderate and conduct our workshops is that we put enough information out there, and people normally see that we're for real and we make them comfortable, and then they're ready to share.
But one other thing that we do is, as far as that is concerned, we also, in the workshop, we do things to make people look at themselves first and foremost, because once again, just like this person ain't going to tell you everything about them, you ain't telling everybody everything about you either. So you need to look at yourself, and one of the things that my wife came up with was she do a thing where they give prices of like a Faygo pop or something, and what their reality is. You know, this one brother said, I think he said, this is about like $3 a month.
Yeah, because what you really think your perception and reality is not someone else's perception and reality.
Right.
This is our life, and this is how we live. This is our reality. We don't consider it like celebrity or anything else like that. This is how we live, but a lot of other people do. We get called celebrities, but we don't look at ourselves as...
I ain't no celebrity.
You know, different people have different perceptions and realities, and it's the same thing in a marriage. You know, you can see things two different ways. And that's what we try to bring out in our workshop, because if you're not talking about it, this goes back to the communication. If you're not talking about it, if you're not putting the issues on the table, then how do you know? Earlier in our marriage, I always had to tell my husband about my feelings and how I'm feeling. He didn't think I should be feeling like that. Well, you can't tell me how to feel. You can't do that. These are my feelings. You can't tell me how to feel.
I'm just a little boy from Alabama.
You can't tell me how to feel, but you had to learn. He had to learn how to respect my feelings.
I sure did.
That way.
And I sure did learn, didn't I?
You sure did.
I sure did. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it sounds to me, you all got about 9 minutes. Tell us, if I walked in, I'm Mr. Alfred from Lynchburg, Virginia, and I said, I'm coming to your seminar, your couple workshop, and how does it work? Just tell me.
But if you, well, first of all, Mr. Alfred, hopefully you'll be there registered to pay before you walk in the door so we don't have to have that conversation.
Y'all got my Benjamins. How much is it costing? I know y'all ain't let nobody get become air hustlers. So there are no air hustlers.
Yeah, because if you come in and you ain't paid, then, you know, I have to be like, look, I swipe your card. Give me your card. I swipe your card. Then we can talk, okay? But, no, if you come to one of our workshops as a married person, we ask that you come with your spouse. We don't like to do couples workshops with just one individual.
Well, they understand it. It don't work that way. Now, we have had one from the couple come out and take things back to the spouse. But the way we do it is interactive. So we really be wanting both spouses there.
Right. We do what we call, I guess the other people would call this, well, we do icebreakers. We'll have an icebreaker conversation, and then we will do something that's interactive. We break up the brothers and the sisters. My husband takes the brothers, I take the sisters.
So we can find out the real issue.
Yeah, because people get more comfortable when they're not around one another, and that's when the waterfalls start. Waterfalls. And then we come back together, and baby, the room is on fire. Everybody want to talk.
So how much does it cost to participate in your couple workshop, and how does one register?
Well, it depends on where we're going to be. Normally, if it's set up, if it's at a masjid, we normally do whatever the economical price is for the demographic. So it works on a sliding scale. If it's at a community center or something like that, we normally go nowhere more than like $50 per couple.
Oh, this is quite reasonable. Yeah.
We didn't do this, brother, to get rich. We did this to help couples.
Yeah, not at all. That's not
it's
the
just
game.
Our time.
Yeah, it's a lot of the money goes for our time and for our travel because we do travel, so there's expenses. So yeah, we didn't do it to get rich, but that's what I'm saying. A lot of people see us like in the celebrity element or whatever. We're just real people trying to help real people.
So, where'd you all's next workshop would be?
The nearest one?
Yes.
As soon as we sign on the dotted line, we're going to be doing one in Dayton, Ohio in April.
Okay. Have y'all ever thought about doing like cruises, couple cruises, workshop cruises, that kind of thing? Or weekends?
What? We're going to be doing a couples retreat in August, and it's our very first one, and it's going to be in Hilton Head, South Carolina.
Okay, we have about 5 minutes, and anybody now that'd like to join us, dial 805-727-7013. Press 1 on your phone if you're already online with us. We're speaking with Rufus and Jenny Triplett. Top-notch couple workshop facilitators. And, I'm going to go back to our dear friend here, Brother Rufus, who has been a big advocate of counseling. Brother Rufus, why do you, again, put so much emphasis on counseling?
Just because I feel it's needed and because I feel someone else hearing your issues instead of you trying to figure them out yourself is going to tell you the real. I mean, be real, we tell you the truth. And if it's you, you need to look at yourself. You know, once again, a lot of what we do is turn it with a counselor. The counselor is not there with you. All the counselor is doing is hearing what your issues is. And 9 times out of 10, a lot of these issues is the person who's telling it what the issue is. The majority of those issues is that person. Now, the abuse, which is something that me and my wife do not condone at all in no shape, form, or fashion, That's some real stuff. And that does come out a lot of the time. And if that is the case, then that other person needs some serious help. But that's a horse of a different color.
What about verbal abuse? Are we just talking about physical abuse, or are we talking about there can be abuse? A lot of people think it's abuse because it's just laying of hands. But actually, verbal abuse sometimes can even be worse.
Yeah, it definitely can. The physical abuse is what I'm talking about, what I was just talking about. Verbal abuse is, sometimes it can be even worse than the physical abuse. But, once again, the counselor is going to get to the bottom of that. If you're sitting there at the table and that person does not think that he or she is verbally abusive, you're not going to get anywhere. And, you know, actually, we've had situations where the person might have been verbally abusive, but the other person didn't really see it as such. They saw it as that person always wanting their way. Yeah, but, no, it was actually verbal abuse that she was experiencing, but she didn't label it as such. So a counselor would definitely, if they know what they're doing, and they own their job, is going to bring that to light. That's verbal abuse. Well, he says, nah, that's verbal abuse.
Yo!
Yeah. Sister, what do you think about this?
If it's physical abuse, run. We talk about that in our book. Run.
Be a track star.
If it's physical abuse. Verbal abuse, you could possibly work through. I mean, nobody wants to have anybody sitting there calling them fat, sloppy, lazy, you're stupid, you're just like your mother, you're just like your father. You're never going to be anything in life.
Ooh, that's just too negative for me.
Yeah, you could defer that on a child the same way you do that on a spouse. So obviously there's something going on in from your childhood, that some issues that you need to deal with.
But this is the person you love, though.
And, you know, to have that type of transference, because you're transferring that for whatever reason onto a spouse or a child. So those issues can be worked.
You all are using some terminology that is bantered about in the field of psychotherapy, psychoanalysis, transference. Are either you trained in counseling or human development?
I'm just 25 years.
Brother, this comes from a lot of reading and a lot of experience. You don't always necessarily have to have the certification in order to have the knowledge.
No, I agree with you.
Which is what I learned from those older couples that I used to tell you I used to talk to. That's what I learned. I mean, none of them went to school. As a matter of fact, some of them had high school diplomas.
And my childhood friend was the library. And I kept that. I mean, just years and years and years and years. I read a lot. I still read, not as much as I used to, but I read a lot.
I read more now than I did back in the day, but, yeah, I mean, reading.
I agree with you. And this transference and counter-transference, this is all very real stuff. And I think the missing link, particularly in the African-American Muslim community, is the psychotherapeutic piece. That you all know our trademark of our show, the taglines it is recovering from the effects of slavery. I've shared with our audience that my grandmother, Amanda Lulamain Allen, rather, was a slave. She was born in 1860, she said, probably much earlier than that. But she said 1862, but she remembered when slavery ended. So I don't know how old she was because she didn't know didn't have a Bible at the time. But, you know, when you think about that, and then I look at my mother and my father, we are doing remarkably well considering from where we have come from. So I agree with transference. I agree with counter-transference. I think all of these are major issues. I'm hoping that you all will come back on our show again and to address. Give us the title of your book, and how one can get in touch with you.
It's Surviving Marriage in the 21st Century. You can find it on Amazon, at Barnes & Noble's Books A Million, anywhere books are sold. It's also digital on Kindle. And anybody can get in touch with us at our website, Rufus and Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y, so old school, triplet, T-R-I-P-L-E-T-T, rufusandjennytriplet.com.
Well, how do you spell Rufus?
R-U-F-U-S.
Well, doggone it, just spell my name, too, then.
You know how to spell your name. Spell your name. Spell your name.
There ain't no Beyonce moment.
You all sound like you all could sing, too. Are you all the singing couple?
He can sing.
Come on, girl, let him sing.
He can sing. What comes up comes out of me. That's all that is. But he can sing.
It sure do be coming out.
I hope you all will come back again, and I hope you'll come back before Valentine's Day. We don't celebrate Valentine's Day, but I'm sure in many homes where they don't celebrate Valentine's Day, the guy that comes in the house without a Valentine's present may get bashed upside the head with a bean pot, or worse.
You know what, and that's a whole other topic, you ma'am, that we talk about. It sure is. You know, my husband can go out right now and buy me a dozen rare roses. It ain't Valentine's Day, and it'd be just as meaningful. That day means nothing.
Can I just get one rose?
No, you can't.
Why I got to be 12?
Because we 25 years of marriage. One rose ain't going to do it.
Well, I'll do three.
Yeah.
What about 25 roses?
I'll take the 12. I'm good. I ain't hard to please.
We have been delighted for an hour and a half to have Rufus and Jenny Triplett, marriage coaches, couple coaches, great fambeticians to have been with us on Religion Means a Lot. We are going to have you before Valentine's Day, I tell you. I won't have you after before, and we're going to insist that 25 roses be brought here for you. You have listened to Religion Live. I'm your host, Ma'am Alfred. Religion Means a Lot. Don't forget me. Go to GoFundMe, Imam Alfred's Prostate Cancer Fund, and send us a donation. Peace be on our noble and honorable listening audience. You've listened once again to another edition of Religion Means a Lot, and you all can also download this show. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Imam Alfred, and put in the date 1/17/2014, and you can listen to this again. I hope you all put that on your site. This was a very insightful program. I'm so glad to have known this couple, and hopefully we will continue with the 25 roses the next time we get that report too. Thank you. And see you tomorrow. Assalamu alaikum.